Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Baytown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. How's it going?
All good in the known universe. We're ready for round two of the playoffs. We're still talking about the Houston Texans. And we had a stinker of a football game last night. And by the way, one of my good friends was telling me about all the plays. Did I see this play and that play in basketball? I didn't even know they played a full day of games yesterday because I was worried about was the football game, and then it sucked.
Yeah. I mean, it was like on Twitter and stuff like that. But other than that, I didn't watch NBA. I watched NFL when I got home. I did have lunch today, so I might get a little drunk on coffee by the end of the show. Just a fair warning.
You get cranky
might
when
get
you
a little loopy. If I'm drinking coffee, I won't get cranky, but I'll get like fuzzy and wild.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Ooh, tear the roof off of this
wild
sucker.
Like I get hyperactive. Wild's not a great word to use. More hyperactive. Like I get hyperactive and I like don't really know the words that are coming out of my mouth.
Let's hope we get to that point.
And how is that different than normal?
That's a good point.
Wow.
Shots fired
and
1 minute into the show.
The show is underway.
It's 12:01. I'm already taking shots from our producer.
Yes.
Jonathan Gannon is the newest candidate for the Houston Texans. Now, they've not interviewed. I did a deep dive on Jonathan Gannon.
Not shocking.
Does it excite me? No. It does not excite me. Does it excite you?
No.
I wouldn't hate it, but it's pretty far down my list. Now, of the four candidates that they've interviewed so far,
it's not going to happen, Jeremy, and we both know it's not. Because we both know in our heart of hearts that they are going to interview until their heart's content so that they feel like they've appeased all the fans, all the media, and all the critics. And then they're going to go right back to the first two names that surfaced when they fired David Culley. And that's going to be Mayo, and that's going to be Miami's head coach. Why is it?
Flores.
And that's it. And I don't even think McDaniels is in the mix. I think it's those two guys, and that's what it's going to come down to. And now I've seen the interesting thing is, like we talked about, forget who they want. The fact that they are the ass bottom of the list in terms of the sexiness of the jobs and the appeal of the job itself. I think that that's what they – remember the last time that they went through this cycle, they were the first to announce and the last to hire.
Yep.
If they do that again, they're not going to get either one of their candidates because those two guys, I see that Mayo is now – but the request has been put in by the Raiders. They want to talk to him. So that's not going to be the last one. And there's going to be teams with a better roster, with a better chance to win more immediately that are going to entice these guys. So therefore – they damn well better act sooner rather than later. Forget the fact that they want to, have a revolving door of interview candidates. That's all fine and dandy, and they want to appease the world because that stuff does bother them. But they damn well, if they know who they want, they better focus in, zero in, and get to him quickly, or he's going to be gone.
Yeah. I saw the thing on Josh McDaniels, too, where the Texans haven't requested permission to interview Josh McDaniels, good. And that nobody has good. Requested permission to interview Josh McDaniels. Why do you say good?
Because I don't think he's completely – I don't want to say he's damaged goods. But he has some red flags that are going to scare teams away because as far as they got down the line with calling the press conference to announce him as the next head coach of the Indianapolis Colts and the fact that he left him on the altar and the way that he did and then basically in leaving him the way that he did after Kraft and Belichick met at the coffee shop in the restaurant or whatever, it just seemed like he is coaching waiting for the Patriots and that's it. Like, I don't think another team in the NFL should want to talk to him and touch him, but I think that it's too enticing because of what he's been able to do with Mac Jones after what he was able to do with Tom Brady.
You want to hear some of the things? I'm with you on McDaniels. I don't look at McDaniels as this great leader, and to me that's kind of the direction that Nick Caserio is going with this. And look, he had tremendous amount of success with New England, and we point to this all the time. Like, hire somebody that's the reason for the success, Belichick, Brady. Now, you can point to that and say, well, why are you so interested in Jerod Mayo? But that's where the leadership qualifications come into play, at least from my point of view. Here are some things I learned on Jonathan Gannon. We had on Billy Devaney yesterday, our favorite general manager, although Randy Mueller, another former NFL general manager, will be joining us later in the show. So tomorrow, Randy Mueller will be our favorite general manager that joins the program. But until he comes on later, Billy Devaney is currently the reigning champion in that category. Now, Brendan texted Billy Devaney after we found out that Jonathan Gannon was a candidate for this job. And the reason for that is because Jonathan Gannon was a scout under Billy Devaney, and he brought him over to St. Louis after they had ties together in Atlanta as well. So it's kind of funny, small world type of thing, that the day we had on Billy Devaney, an hour later, Jonathan Gannon's now somebody that the Texans have interest in. But Billy was great in that he responded back to Brendan, and Brendan just asked, what are your thoughts on Jonathan Gannon? Devaney said this, a Mike Zimmer disciple. Things were on the verge in Philly. Gannon's the current defensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. Things were on the verge in Philly to turning to crap, and he held it together. Very smart, more personality than Zimmer. Really like, but needs a bit more seasoning. Hearing that from Billy Devaney, does it pique your interest a little bit more than whenever we started the show?
It's a nice endorsement. There's some encouraging things there. I still don't think it's the right fit for this franchise. And I think I go back to the fact that, you know, you're going to be working for a dictator unless you have a pre-existing relationship with Nick Caserio and you believe that you can have open conversations when you pick your spots to push back. That's why I think, again, we're going right back to the Patriots way.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't think this is the right fit. I think he could be the right fit somewhere else. I think he's in a good spot in Philadelphia because with a young head coach, he probably has a lot of input, and that's probably very helpful. So I think it's good for his career for him to go and make the rounds and get the interviews. I think at the end of the day, he ends up back in Philadelphia. I don't think he's going to make it this cycle anyway, but I don't think he's the right guy for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to get a few interviews for head coach. He's only been a defensive coordinator with Philadelphia for 1 year. Prior to that, spent three seasons as the defensive backs coach for the Colts, which it seems like Caserio has a little bit of interest in Colt defensive guys. Remember, Eberflus was somebody that actually rejected an interview with the Houston Texans last year, wanted no part of the Houston Texans. The defense for the Eagles, I'm curious if this might pique your interest, and I know how you feel about Gannon, but just about him as a candidate. Number 25 in the NFL in defensive DVOA, which isn't great, but if you look at the total yards allowed, they were number 10 in the NFL with that defense. So do those numbers maybe change the interest you could have in a Jonathan Gannon?
No. You know why? Because we're looking at a roster that's going to be completely overhauled again start before the start of next season. And the fact that whatever he was able to do in Philadelphia, you already got Lovie Smith. And Lovie Smith was able to do with smoke and mirrors what, you know, you're asking someone to come from Philadelphia and do and expect to do better and have more talent on board. Well, why not just give Lovie Smith some more talent and let him keep doing what he's been doing? Again, that's why I'm not trying to poo-poo on any of his accomplishments. I just think they'll interview him, but I think they'll also pass him over pretty quickly.
All right, the last thing that I have, I'm curious if it piques your interest, because it piqued mine. There was a mic'd up that he had with the Eagles that I found on YouTube. He takes some fat dips. I mean, some, like, massive dips. Like, I mean, it's sticking, like Bazooka Joe type of stuff, where it's just sticking out of his cheek. It's almost like a third cheek. I personally love that in a coach. It means he's not sleeping much. It means that he's ready to go. It means that he's got a lot of attitude. He's got a lot of snuff.
240-ounce coffee's worth.
I love the fact that the dude had a major dip in during the mic'd up segment that I saw. That got me more excited than anything else. I'll be honest.
I'm glad you're happily married, but you should have gone to school where I went to school. Because if that excites you, and then when you think about a female doing it, that might actually put you over the top. Might be something that you were interested in.
I mean, I like fat dips in my head football coaches, not my wife.
Okay, I'm just saying, because
about here?
I don't think that should matter either way, but I can tell you honestly from experience, walking into bars and seeing a really, really hot chick and then have her put a napkin in a disposable cup and start spitting into it and just go, you've got to be. And some, like, guys on my baseball team were like, I like that.
No way.
I was like, out. And for that reason, I'm out.
I don't believe you. I don't believe that guys on your team saw that in a woman. And, like, I find that as an attractive characteristic of that young lady.
And the reason why is, like, why a smoker kisses another smoker and doesn't have a problem. The fact that if you are a guy that plays baseball that dips and you're kissing a female that dips, it doesn't bother them that much because they're both doing the same thing.
713-780-3776. Do you ever look at a female that dips and like that in a woman? Do you like that as a quality in a woman? I'd be out. Like,
is that
a Midwest thing,
Brendan? You ever seen a female dip?
I've seen it happen.
I don't think so.
I've seen it happen.
Really? I don't know many people, period, who dip.
You haven't been in Texas long.
I mean, it's not that I don't know anybody, but I could probably count them on one hand.
See, I played baseball. Everybody did. Yeah. I was the one guy that didn't.
Yeah, I played baseball, too. So there were lots of dip cans around the old baseball clubhouse, especially in Texas. Yeah, I can't imagine that anybody would look at a woman who dips and find attractiveness in said young lady. 713-780-3776, prove me wrong. All right, so this is, again, Jonathan Gannon has not interviewed to be the Texans head coach yet. They've requested permission to interview Gannon. I imagine it will happen at some point. I would also imagine we find out another candidate or two by the time we're done with today's show, much like we said that yesterday. And Gannon, we found out later in the show that he was somebody that the Texans requested permission to interview. All four of these interviewees right now, potential interviewees, you have Jonathan Gannon now. We already know that over the weekend, three other coaching interviews were executed. Brian Flores, Hines Ward, and then blanking on the third for whatever reason. Lombardi, Joe Lombardi, Vince Lombardi's grandson. That's right. So Joe Lombardi, Vincent Hines Ward, Brian Flores, and now Jonathan Gannon. You know a similarity I find in all four of these guys? And it goes back to what Nick Caserio told us during the press conference. I don't know why people say that Nick Caserio talks a lot and doesn't say much. It gives you hints. He gives you clues. He said we weren't worried about the X's and O's. We aren't worried about coordinators. We want leaders. And I understand that Jonathan Gannon has been a defensive coordinator, but he was number 25 in DVOA this year, 10th in yards allowed. That's not, like, great. But he likes him from that leadership perspective. Brian Flores has never been a defensive coordinator. You look at Vince Lombardi's grandson. Yes, he's been an OC, but he doesn't call the plays right now with the Chargers, so they're not looking at him for a coordinator role. And then Hines Ward's currently a wide receivers coach. He's never been a coordinator either. The Texans aren't looking for these top shot coordinators. They want leaders of men.
I don't know how you can get that much proof and backup that they're leaders of men, especially when they don't have that much power to be actual leaders within the football team. So, I mean, it's great that they want all those things. But, you know, it's aside from Flores, nothing has impressed me other than just tallying some numbers that look good for the NFL and for checking all the boxes they need to check before they actually settle in on who they want to hire. So, you know, my bigger question would be if Lombardi really had any stones that when he walked into the building, the first thing that he looked at before they asked him any questions was he looked at everybody in the eye and said, "What the hell is going on around here?" Like his grandfather would do, because it's a crap show. But you know what? You're getting an interview with a crap. I think with Lombardi in particular, this is just David Culley all over again. Hey, I get a chance for my first ever head coaching opportunity. I'm just happy to be here. I'll talk to the guys and say the right things. And if things work out for me, yay, and I get a bigger paycheck and I get a shot. Otherwise, I'm fine where I'm at.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager, will be joining us at 1:30. Get some thoughts on where the Texans are at right now, post-David Culley going into the coaching search and then into a critical offseason in which they hold the number 3 draft pick. For how long, though? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we come back, what's your grade on Nick Caserio after year one? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Nick Caserio just finished up his first regular season as the general manager, maybe more, of the Houston Texans. But he wears a lot of hats. We know that he wears a lot of hats. He wears a lot of headsets.
He only wears one headset, yeah.
After one season, we had Billy Devaney, our favorite GM, until Randy Mueller joins us at 1:30. He was on with us yesterday, former GM of the St. Louis Rams. He said that he would give Nick Caserio a passing grade, but the one concern that he does have is this.
Okay, then fill me in, guys. When you, and that's great. If you're in that mode, then how do you start the season? I think they were the second oldest roster in the NFL. They may have been first for a while, but at worst, it was the second oldest roster. If you're going to be in rebuild, you can't have that many old guys on your team. If you're rebuilding, okay, that's fine. We get it. But let's get some of these. We got to get some young guys some playing time and start this process. That's where I think they're behind right now.
Let's address the old guys first. Because, look, if you're a rebuilding team, you should be doing everything you can to play the youth and be doing everything you can to play the young players. The problem is that the roster that Nick Caserio inherited wasn't very young. There wasn't a whole lot of young players that you're really grooming and that you want to develop. Bill O'Brien traded the farm for Laramie Tunsil. He traded future picks to mortgage the future for the right now, and it backfired royally. So he inherited this problem where he didn't really have good young players, and then on top of that, didn't have a first-round pick, didn't have a second-round pick. Like, I don't love the idea of going out and signing Danny Amendola for three times more than the league minimum, re-signing Rex Burkhead. Like, yeah, that looks kind of weird. Almost looks like nepotism for a former guy who was in the family in New England. But it's not like Caserio had all these young players that he did not play at the expense of an Amendola and Burkhead.
No, it was more survival of the oldest. I think that what they were trying to do there was get through one season of NFL football and take experience over anything else. And pick and choose, right? You're going to play your draft picks already, but if there were some young guys that you legitimately had your eye on that you thought you could develop or thought might have talent, then you would bring them in. But the biggest thing was that you didn't want to embarrass yourself for the season that you were trying to just get through and playing the schedule and playing out the string with guys that were going to be like the Cowboys in the playoffs, committing playoffs and penalties on every play, looking completely clueless. You talk about their culture, you know, acting like professionals, both at practice and in the locker room. I think that that's why they did what they did. They brought in a lot of experienced guys that, again, were probably looking for one last shot to prove they belong in the league. And whether it's here or somewhere else, earn another spot for another year starting this upcoming season by doing what they did for the Houston Texans. And I think a lot of guys did that, too. But I think that's why they were trying to build up the level of trust with some of the guys you mentioned, guys they already knew they could trust from New England days. And if it wasn't guys they already had a pre-existing relationship that they could trust with, it was a veteran because they knew that they could handle their business and act the right way while they were trying to figure out what they were going to do next.
Yeah, they almost brought in those veterans to serve as, like, coaches for the younger guys. Like, there was that around week 12, week 13, whenever, like, okay, should you start Tyrod Taylor? Should you start Davis Mills? And eventually they went to Davis Mills, some would say because of Tyrod Taylor got injured. But that seemed like an area where they were maybe going with a veteran over a young player. You look at the receiver pitch position, like, it took Nico Collins away. But maybe they didn't want to ruin those guys, like if you're advocating it on the side of Caserio's point of view. All right, let's get to our grade on what you thought of Nick Caserio in year one. We'll go with age over beauty. So what did you think? What did you think of Nick Caserio? What is your grade of Caserio after one regular season?
Well, I think overall, I stay steadfast with what I've said over all along, which is I'm not going to give him either a big pass or a crushing defeat until he really does something, right? So I'm going to criticize him for what he did with Cully and the fact, just from the term of the contract, because we all knew from the outside looking in who he was, and I think that Nick in his heart of hearts knew what he was too, and he was the perfect puppet and guy to do what he needed him to do to bridge until they got good. However, the years and the money, whether you believe Schefter or Rappaport or you know, all these different guys have all these different ideas. But he's getting paid, and he's getting paid minimally for, at the minimum, at least one more year at a very high salary. But if you believe what he told Mark Berman and others and some of the stories that broke, he could be getting the entire value of his contract. That's a deal breaker for a lot of owners that are really tight with the bottom line. So I think that that's a strike against him. He didn't have a full draft. He was able to orchestrate just what we were talking about, a roster that was serviceable for a year and carve out a lot of cap space and get out of a lot of cap hell. So I it's kind of back and forth. That's why I give him a C. I'm still firmly like jury's still out, but I'm not ready to crucify him. I'm just not ready to compliment him. I'm just saying, okay, you're going to have a big hire here coming up with head coach, and then you're going to have your first full draft full of all your picks, and you still got that one big ticket hanging out over your head. What you do with number four and where you send him and what you get are going to go a long way for me to give you a passing grade and beyond.
The bulk of what's going to define Nick Caserio as a general manager is going to happen over the next 3 to 4 months, right? The head coach that he's going to hitch his wagon to, it was never hitched to David Culley. We all know that David Culley, as much as other people want to try to fool you and tell you otherwise, we all know that David Culley was a stopgap bridge head coach until the guy that Nick Caserio wanted was either A, available, or B, Nick Caserio didn't want to subject him to a bad football team and put that on his resume. The pros and cons, if I'm looking at Caserio, first off, my letter grade's a D for general manager Nick Caserio. The pros that I have, I like the way that he handled the draft. I mean, Davis Mills, the rookie third rounder, outplayed any expectations that you thought he would perform at for a rookie third round quarterback. A lot of people crucified Caserio over that pick. Oh, he's reaching because Deshaun Watson demanded a trade. He wanted Kellen Mond. Well, Davis Mills outperformed where he was picked in the draft, no doubt about it. He hit on Nico Collins. Lopez was a good pick. Even the Wallow, we saw him play a little bit towards the latter part of the season. He looked pretty good for a late round draft pick. Again, these are minor picks because you're looking at rounds 3 through 7, but they outperformed what you would expect them to perform at in their rookie year. So I give Caserio passing grades on that for sure. The negatives that I point to is the 6th round pick for Ryan Finley, the 5th round pick for Anthony Miller, not having the foresight to know what Zach Cunningham's going to look like in a 4-3, moving from a 3-4, and we see what kind of productivity he's giving the Tennessee Titans, not having the foresight to trade a Zach Cunningham whenever he still had value over the offseason. So there's been a lot of like minor moves for Caserio in year one. So there's been some good, there's been some bad, but I give him the D, like just barely a passing grade, kind of like Billy Devaney said.
Brendan's shaking his
head. Why is Brendan shaking his head?
Oh, Joel was shaking his head, too. It was just phrasing. That's all, Jeremy.
Just the phrasing?
The phrasing.
And because you love him so much, you will protect him instead of saving that and logging it.
Well, you didn't just give him the AD. You said, I'll give him the D.
Yeah, you just want to give him the D. And so that goes to Brendan's point that you really, truly love him.
I didn't even realize I said that.
See, I don't understand with all the things that you said how you go to a D. That's not a passing grade. I mean, that's...
D's a passing grade. Absolutely, D's a passing grade.
No, it's not. No,
Is D not a passing grade?
No. At what level of education?
Yeah. Anything above an F is a passing grade.
No, that's not true.
713-780-3776.
A C and above is a passing grade. Yeah, a C and above is a passing grade. You're telling me that you think a passing grade is a D. This is where this tells me so much about where I've been trying to figure out what's been missing in our conversations and how you think the way you think. This might go a long way to figuring it all out. You think a passing grade is a D.
Yeah, it's not an F. It's above an F. An F's a fail.
Please,
if you're not failing, you're passing.
Please chime in.
This is a genuine question. Would you view your children's D as a passing grade?
I would not be happy with it.
Because it was not treated as a passing grade in my household.
Or mine.
And at the college level, it's not. Like, it is actually not a passing grade.
Well, I never made a D. So I want to make sure we set those parameters right out of the
gate. You wouldn't know because you were too good for that.
I was an A, B, and C student. Like, I'm not saying that I, like, lit the world on fire in GPA. Like, definitely not. But I don't think I ever made a D. I assume anything above an F was a passing grade.
Oh,
this is really interesting because when I saw the rundown and you had given, you know, initially a D.
Yeah.
I was like, that is not the guy I've listened to for the last 2 months.
Exactly. It doesn't equate.
Hold on. So what do you think? What do you think that the grade that I would have given Nick Caserio was?
A C. A C is a passing grade. You can give a C minus, but a C is a passing grade. Anything below a C is not a passing grade.
But that's a different conversation. Like Brendan's saying that like the way that I've talked about Nick
Caserio.
No, but
it translates to your breakdown of Nick Caserio, because if you thought that the way we think, which is C and above is passing and D and F's are not, that you would not have given him a non-passing grade. Therefore, a C would be the appropriate grade.
Did you hear my wife texting and saying D's get degrees? I've heard that saying before. That's absolutely true. D's get degrees. Thank you, wife, for texting that in. 713-780-3776.
Easy, wife.
She's a ride or die. Look at her. I've never been more attracted to her in my life.
Get
she
degrees.
Never dips, I promise you that.
Like, what, do they get a fever? There's no way they get a degree, like a piece of paper that says they passed. A D, there's no way. I mean, I even go back to playing sports in college and even in high school.
D's
if you got
degrees.
Anything below a C, you were not playing.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Brian, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know this because I was like a C, B student, but a D would be anywhere from a 65 to a 69. A D plus is a 67 to 69, and a D is a 65, 66.
It's analytics.
So
is that a pass or a fail?
That's a fail.
All right. I would say anything under a 70 is a fail now. So now I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, which I hate doing,
but... Oh, my goodness!
I always thought a 6, like anything below a 70 was an F. I really did.
But that's the D.
You might be right. But some people on the text line are saying that D undergrad university accepts a D as a passing grade. Grad school does not view a D as a passing grade.
Doesn't surprise me. A D is a passing grade.
Technically,
I mean, come on now.
Technically, D is a passing grade, but doesn't mean you're happy. I mean, in college, a D is definitely a pass. I think D is my Uncle Barney's texting in, and he's a professor, a tenured professor.
Where?
I don't know if he wants to be outed as a member of the Killer Bees. No, he's
Wharton
a tenured
community.
No, he's a tenured professor at U of H downtown. He said a D will get you credit. Yeah, but you have to have a 2.0 to graduate. This might be where you get me in technicality.
Okay.
You have to have a 2.0 to graduate, but a D will get you the credit. So,
but isn't a 2.0, that's a C, right? Okay.
Yeah, so so your overall cumulative GPA has to be higher than a D in order to graduate, but it does give you a passing credit for the class. The more you know. Nick Caserio, you got a passing credit for the class, but if it was right now, you couldn't walk across the stage and graduate as a successful general manager
for you,
of the
sir.
Houston Texans. 713-780.
I'm a little bit more disturbed by how many people think it's a passing grade.
Apparently, it is a passing grade.
I'm
it's
more
fact,
disturbed
than
your
opinion.
Wife. We know she didn't marry you for the brains, but I mean, at the same time, for your wife to say a D gets a degree.
Did she marry me for the brawn?
No.
Then what else? 713-780.
It's your charisma and your personality, I hope. I don't know.
Thank you. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. When we come back, let's take a look at the last wild card round game in the NFL. Cardinals-Rams yesterday. We discuss it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
There is some debate.
There's not just some debate.
There's a lot of debate?
There's a lot of back and forth. This has stirred up a lot of people's opinions.
You can head over to at ESPN 97.5 on Twitter to weigh in on this. There's a poll up. Is a D a passing grade? Two options, yes or no. Go weigh in. We'll give you the results a little bit later. What are you seeing on the – I stepped out for some coffee, so I'm having a tough time keeping up with, like, the Twitchers and the Texters. What's the overwhelming takeaway from our listeners as to what a D is?
I think it's back and forth. I think the text line is basically in agreement with me, and I think that you've seen a lot between Twitch and Twitter that people seem to believe, at least in Texas, that a D is passing because – then Dre gives me this messed up scale where Dr. Dre on 290 says
where do we live?
A C is 75 to 79. I'm like, no, where I'm from, 70 to 79 is a C, and anything below 70 is a fail. It's a D, but you're not passing the class, and you're not collecting go, and you're not all the other stuff. So it's just, I don't know, maybe it is the part of the country that you're in that dictates what's passing and what's failing. That gives me so much intel into, like, explaining how you are the way you are.
Well, I went to, I don't know why that would give you any intel as to
how
I am.
So this is
what
at least giving you the answer that you think a D
what
is a passing
mean?
Grade.
I will say this, whenever I was in school.
And the fact that you want to give the D to Nick Caserio.
Whenever I was in, that was a mess up.
Was that a Freudian slip?
Yeah, Brendan, will you fix that in post, please? whenever I was in school, a C was a 70 through a 79. Anything below a 70 was actually a failing grade.
Oh!
Which does contradict what I'm saying. But
completely!
Now, hold on, let me finish. But looking at it now, like looking at the state of Texas and their high school requirements, and like things are probably a little bit different in colleges. And
is this another deep dive?
No, it was a quick deep dive.
Okay.
The Texas high school, I guess by the government or whatever, by the state of Texas, 90 through 100 is A. 80 through 89 is B, 75 through 79 is C, and 70 to 74 is D.
See,
and it says passing right here.
I know,
here.
And that's contradictory too, because why are you going in increments of 10 for the A and the B, and then a C is an increment of 5? It makes no sense.
I mean, you're going to have to take that up with the state of Texas. Take it up with the state of Texas. 713-780-ESPN.
We got people going and debating it, so bring it to us, and we'll continue to update you.
713-780-3776.
Dumbass.
And check out the Twitter poll at ESPN 97.5. All right, let's get to the football game yesterday. The Cardinals and the Rams, the last game in Super Wild Card Weekend.
It wasn't even a game. It sucked.
It was still a football game. Here was a big play for the Rams in this one.
Ready to call for it. Three to his right. Takes the snap, sets the laces, bounces in the pocket, hit from behind, flips it forward. It is intercepted! Intercepted! A pick six! David Long Jr. plucks it at the one! He's got an interception return for a touchdown!
That was a bad play by Kyler Murray.
That's a bad call.
The Rams, well, great the call.
A four?
Here's what screwed the play-by-play guy there. The production was not great. The call, I feel like, is better than a four, but the production value is subpar.
What are you giving it?
I'm going to give it a four as well.
Yeah, I think it completely deserves it.
We probably should stick away from the letter grades.
I also think the voice is fading, and I also think that he's repeating. It sounded more like a call from Greenville, South Carolina during the middle of a high school playoff game than it should be sounding for an NFL playoff game.
All right, Rams Radio Network on the call. But
it was awful. Brendan, what are you giving it?
I'm with Jeremy. I didn't think the call was the problem. Yeah. The production value, and it was this way on all their highlights, was rough.
Yeah, I don't disagree
with
what you're saying.
Which means they might be evaluating certain jobs in the offseason. They better.
not McVay's job, at least. Not Stafford's job,
nope.
At least. Not Cooper Kupp. Maybe not even Odell Beckham. But the Rams win 34-11. They were up 21-0 at the half. Matt Stafford getting his first playoff win, and after the game, his head coach, Sean McVay. Look, Stafford didn't have anything to prove.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job leading the way. He's still the same great player to me, and he always was before this game as well. And so I think it's good so you guys don't have to talk about that anymore, so you can get that one out of the way. But really proud of him. Just so lucky to be able to do this with him. He's our leader. We wouldn't be here without him.
There you go. You can stop talking about it, guys, because Stafford's got it out of the way, the first playoff win.
Were you aware of the man love and the number one fan status of Matt Stafford that we are in company of with Brendan Riley?
Yeah, I do know that Brendan Riley loves himself some Matt Stafford.
I knew he was a Lions fan. I didn't know he carried it over to the deep devotion that he has with poster on wall of one Matt Stafford in a Rams uniform.
Framed picture, thank you.
It's like the Harden only
fan. Is it signed?
Though. No.
Then why is it framed?
I mean, to be honest with you, I did a tour of the stadium when I was in L.A., which came with, like, credit to their team store. Yeah, and I had been wanting wall art, and what better wall art than the man himself?
Art.
What was that?
That's wall art?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I actually think it's weird. Because people,
I do too.
People give me a lot of crap for it, but I think it's weird that it catches you off guard when I have as much love for a human being as I do a football team. A billion-dollar organization.
So A.J. Hoffman used to do this with – that's why he used to always say, that's why I love players, not teams. And his allegiance would always go with players, not teams. But, like, for me, and I had to think about this long and hard over the offseason with Rodgers. Like, I don't know that I would be a massive Aaron Rodgers fan if he wore another uniform. I'd be pissed off. And I also know that I would still be – you know, I would be a devout Packer fan – but I don't think that I'd have the same passion if I knew how bad they were going to be without him.
The difference is your organization has won without him. My organization in my lifetime, I went back before the season started, and it since 2000, the Lions were something like 35-150 when quarterbacks other than Matthew Stafford started. You can debate where he ranks in the league. He is 10 times better than the second-best quarterback. Like, it's comparable to Houston. Like, what's the gap between Deshaun Watson and quarterback two? Mm-hmm. In fact, I would argue the gap might be bigger in Detroit. So, yeah, I have love for the guy who was my quarterback for 12 years.
I can't remember the last time. Like, my allegiances ride with Houston. Like, I was born here. All of my teams growing up were the, Houston franchises. And I think part of it's why I'm like, I want the Texans to win, but I don't have, like, that boyhood allegiance to who the Texans were. Like, I rather have the Oilers, obviously, because I grew up with the Oilers. But the only time I can remember, like, following players outside of a city after they were in Houston was actually the Tennessee Titans. Like, I love Steve McNair, and I loved Eddie George, and a lot of the players on that team I loved when they left, and I was really excited about the future of what they were going to be. So, like, when they went to the Super Bowl and they were 1 yard short, and Kevin Dyson didn't quite get into the end zone, I was gung-ho about the Titans. I love the Titans, but as soon as McNair and George were out of there and they were gone, I lost all allegiance to Tennessee.
Do you guys not care at all about you know, seeing J.J. Watt succeed?
I want J.J. to succeed, but I'm not on the edge of my seat like, let's go, J.J. Watt. Like, I'd rather him win than lose, but I don't think that that, like, my...
He and D-Hop, both. I mean, I'd pull for them if I don't have any kind of allegiance in the game. Then I definitely do because of them, and I want them to do well. But it's not like I'm going out and getting Cardinals gear and becoming an instant Cardinals fan because they're now on a member of that team instead of the Texans.
I know I'm a grown-ass man now.
Yes, you are.
But the team drafted Stafford when I was in ninth grade. So I do have a boyish love for him still. I think when he's gone...
That's why you have wall art.
Yeah, I do. I think when he's gone, I don't think I'll be that way anymore about anybody ever again.
Probably.
But I was, you know, 14, 15 years old when he joined the team.
See, my favorite players... They stayed, though, too, right? Like, Biggio was one of my favorite players. He never played for anybody else. Loved Bagwell, never played for anybody else. I loved Hakeem. He played for Toronto, but he also won the city two championships. Like, I wonder if there's also, a line of thinking for people who, like, only have been Texans fans that J.J. Watt going to Arizona, where you root for him, you want him to do well, DeAndre Hopkins, too, you want them to do well. But I wonder if there's a sentiment as well within the city that they've never won a championship in Houston. The Texans have never won a championship as a franchise, never been into an AFC championship game in the history of the franchise. I wonder if there's a little bit of thought that they don't want a former Texan great to go win a Super Bowl somewhere else.
I think that's how it ends. I think it's how it ends, because I can take your Hakeem analogy and I give you Brett Favre. And because it got messy at the end, And it was much more kind of definitive in terms of people were pissed off the way Favre was handling things and holding the franchise hostage and looking for special treatment and all the things that was made it different than the way Rodgers was handled by the organization when he was still winning MVPs and everything, that you have a different feeling, right? If it's Rodgers winning an MVP coming off an MVP season, you feel a whole lot differently if he ever considers putting on another jersey, as opposed to if Hakeem's going to play for the Raptors and he's basically on the last leg of what was a Hall of Fame career. You're kind of like, okay, if they can't resolve this and there's a lot of conflict, I get it. It's like JJ, right? You knew his contract was too high and inflated for them to pay it. You knew there was going to be a breaking point before the end of the season or in the off season or at the trade deadline. You knew that the Texans didn't want the black eye of being the one that had to be to pull the plug, so they worked it out. So then you don't feel bad for JJ, because, look, if he had his druthers, he said he'd want to stay. So now you're instantaneously, I'm still in your corner, guy. I'm still rooting for you, man, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's different. I think, you know, from Brennan's perspective, look, I grew up with 20-plus years of losses for the Packers. They never even sniffed the playoffs. It was awful until Brett Favre, you know, came through the door. So you start thinking about that, too, and realize that once they finally get to that point where you thought they'd never get to, and then they start riding it out for a while, then your allegiance becomes a little bit stronger. Then your dedication to them becomes a little bit stronger. And then maybe your ability to not want to let go becomes a little bit stronger as well.
Houston, are you like Brendan, where Brendan was watching his former football love, Matt Stafford, winning his first playoff game, current love, current flame, winning a playoff game with the other team, with the Rams? How would you feel if DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, they won a Super Bowl with another team? Would you be okay with that, or is it Houston or bust? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, could James Harden be on the move again?
Ooh.
And some encouraging comments from Lance McCullers. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A lot of folks saying that they root for the players, not the teams. Which, I mean, it seems that's kind of the generation, right? Like, a lot of people root for the players as opposed to the team. I can't do that.
I can't either. Like, I grew up with the worst possible scenario from the Packers. I grew up with the Brewers being bad for a lot of my childhood and then getting good for a brief period where they made the World Series in 82, but they never won it, right? And they were always battling. They were in the same division with the Yankees and the Red Sox, and it was always an uphill battle. So I grew up with a lot of failures from the standpoint of my teams, but that's my teams. Like, that was when you came out of the womb, basically those were your teams, and it didn't change. That's why, and I appreciate everybody in this city accepting me for being a Packer fan, But, you know, and I always say, I'm a Texans fan unless they're playing the Packers. Otherwise, I'm always a Texans fan. But I appreciate you a lot, guys allowing me to still have that allegiance and that dedication to my squad, because that's the one squad, like, you don't forget that. Like, I've already, from a Brewers perspective, the minute they moved to the National League, to me, I had a free pass to go wherever I wanted, because I didn't agree with that, and I thought that was a ridiculously bad move. And it changed everything that I knew growing up about that team. And then about that time, even though the Astros were losing 100 games a year, I liked what they were doing. I liked the way they went about their business. I liked their colors. I liked the fact that when I was growing up, Milwaukee and the Brewers were so bad, I had an Astros rainbow jersey, and J.R. Richard was my favorite. So it was easy for me to say, look, I'm an Astros fan. I worked for the Rockets, and my heart and soul and everything that I did on a daily basis was dedicated to that franchise for 20-some-odd years. So Rockets and Astros, no-brainer. Packers, to me, it just doesn't change. And sure, again, if you take the Houston teams out of it, I want the Brewers to do well. I'd love to see a Brewers-Astros World Series. And from the Bucks' perspective, them winning it last year meant a ton to me. I have friends that work there, and also because I knew that it had been that long since they had won a title. But I think here, because there's so many transplants, that it changes, because there's not that lifelong dedication. Like, it would be the same of saying, you know, if everybody that grew up in Houston stayed in Houston, it'd be one thing. But most people that grew up in Houston end up in all different parts of the country too. So it's different in trying to keep that fan base to say, oh, wait a minute, you're not a true Houston sports fan?
Well, I think one thing that helps you there is that, you know, if you didn't say you were a Packer fan, you really wouldn't be able to tell, because you know the ins and outs of the Texans better than anybody. So, I mean, you still speak to it like you watch every single down, which you do,
yeah.
And you consume all of it. So I think that's something that helps you, where if you didn't do that, it might hurt you.
Yeah.
Some of the texters saying that you didn't grow up during fantasy football. Fantasy football has changed the way people cheer for players over teams. Yeah, but, like, a lot of people don't play fantasy basketball, but you have, like, Steph Curry-only fans or LeBron James-only fans.
But, yeah, and you don't keep the same guy in your team every single year, too. So that would make – unless it's a keeper league. And then maybe that builds a little bit. But I think it's a good point. I think that when you got into daily fantasy and fantasy sports, I think that a lot of people were more focused on, you know, especially if a guy got you a title or got you a win and had big days, then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm a fan of that guy no matter where he plays and what he does.
To me, it's a separation, though. Like, you can root for that and still root for the other. You can root for your fantasy team and still root for your local team as well. 3306 saying, I was happy when Hunter Pence, Brad Lidge, and Lance Berkman won World Series with other teams. I can see that perspective, because, like, they also helped the Astros rebuild, right?
Yes.
Like, you were at a different point when you traded those guys away to where they helped in the rebuild, and you also appreciated the sweat equity they built with the Houston Astros, where you wanted to see them succeed.
It also goes to my point of, whose fault was it? If there was a divorce, whose fault was it? Like, you can't fault Hunter Pence if he wanted to stay and they decided they were going a different direction, they traded him, or Roy Oswalt, or those type guys. That, or, you know, and we go with some of the, like, JJ. We knew there was going to be a parting of ways, and it wasn't JJ's fault. It was the fact that, from a money perspective and otherwise, it was the Texans that had to make a move. So I think that's why I keep saying it plays such a big part in how we look at each individual situation. If the parting of the ways was mutual, or it was respectful, or it wasn't the player's fault, then you obviously can follow them for the rest of their career and pull for them. But if it got messy and ugly, like James Harden, who the minute that it wasn't sunshine and rainbows decided, I'm out, then I call BS every time you call it the H in my H-town. And I love H-town, and I want to live here. Well, go live somewhere else where the grass is always greener every single day, because you screwed us and turned your back on us the first chance you got, after I lived personally through those years where they did everything in their power to give you every opportunity to win. And the first time you didn't think it was all there for you, you skipped on us. That's not loyalty, and that's why I the last thing I want to see in the rest of my lifetime is Harden winning a championship.
The messy is a big part of it. I think the other one, at least for me, and I've seen this multiple times, is when you had a very high-level player whose team didn't perform at that level. And it's not a perfect example, but I can tell you, it felt like the whole city of Detroit was behind Justin Verlander when he got traded here. Because while they competed at the highest level, they never won it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was incredible. He won an MVP in Detroit. And I think people wanted to see this guy who they rooted for, who just couldn't get it done somewhere else. I think, like, the level of success the team had is so big.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think that points like the Lance Berkman thing. J.J. Watt's interesting, too, because three-time defensive player of the year, never got to an AFC championship game. I would say a majority of the Houstonians that like the Texans would rather see J.J. Watt win a Super Bowl than not. And to your point about James Harden, I feel like it's the opposite. Because with Harden, you always felt like you were just on the cusp, but never quite there. And then his exit, the way it happened, being so messy.
But here's the one that always perplexes me. Why is it that Houston hates Chris Paul? Why is it that Houston craps on him when it wasn't his fault?
I don't have that feeling at all.
Oh, I got it from a ton of people and a ton of Rockets fans. And first of all, whether they're still pissed off that it's his fault his body couldn't stay healthy, or
he was out of shape.
Stop it.
He was a bit out of shape.
Oh, my God.
He was chunky.
You've got to be kidding. This coffee chunky. Look, in a lot of ways, I love what this coffee's already done to you without eating. But in a lot of ways, it's also even deeper diving into skewing your thought process.
You don't think he was chunky?
No. And he was having big playoff games. And he was doing everything he possibly could. And you think he wanted his hamstring to pull? I mean, that's the thing. And then you think he wanted to be shipped out of town? He wanted to run it back, too. And so the fact that he didn't, Daryl shipped him out, he's not here anymore. And everybody hates on Chris Paul and wants him to not win one. And they want him to crap the bed. And they're still pissed off at him. Like, Harden's the guy that shoved him out of town. And Harden's the guy that couldn't accept him because he didn't feel like they were on the same level when he was, like, trying to be tough love with him. But I don't understand Houston's disdain for Chris Paul.
See, I'm on the opposite side of that. I feel like Chris Paul's tenure in Houston is more of a positive, and they appreciate what Chris Paul brought to Houston. 713-780-3776. I'm curious the city's thoughts on that.
I have not seen
that. 713-780-3776. Speaking of James Harden, Mark Stein is saying that Daryl Morey wants James Harden in Philadelphia. The idea here is that they would not trade Ben Simmons, they being the Philadelphia 76ers, and then they would use him as a sign and trade in the offseason for James Harden. James Harden has a player option for next season. How do you see this all ending up? It looks like James Harden's days in Brooklyn could be his final year there with the Nets.
We talk about a player looking for the ideal situation and the ideal fit. If for no other reason, James Harden could not be more excited about the fact that the Sixers would do maybe whatever they could do to try and acquire him, because the two guys running the show over there are the two guys that got on their knees and gave him the keys and said, "We love you no matter what, James." And Daryl Morey and Tad Brown, that's all they know in terms of success in their careers, and that's all they want is another run with 13. And so for James to know, hey, if I do think about leaving the Nets, the fact that my guys who gave me the entire sky are sitting there waiting in the wings to give me a big bag of money and want me to do it again, and they already got Joel Embiid, get ready for Dwight and James Volume 2 with a more talented center. I'm ready to do what I got to do to get to Philly.
It'd be exciting. Like, I'm the guy you described earlier where I don't root for James Harden after the way that it ended here. I didn't even root for James Harden when he was a Rocket, to be honest with you. It would be exciting from a basketball viewpoint to see how that pairing would work with Harden and Embiid. How would you feel, Houston? Go ahead.
No, and I want to say this, too. And I want to say this very, very strongly and unequivocally so that people understand this, too. If you look at the fact that what Jeremy just said about Harden and the Sixers' interest, and the minute that you see that, you tweet, "This is why, Houston, you should be excited about the fact that you've got the Nets picks for the next several years." They still have Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
They still have Kyrie Irving. They still have a damn good team, Ben DeBose. So get off your freaking red lined freaking Kool-Aid drinking stupid tweets and think that, oh yeah, once I get my NBA basketballs out of my mouth, I'm going to tell you that the Rockets are in awesome shape for that Harden trade because they got the Nets picks, dude. Shut the hell up. Seriously, like, think logically. Those picks are still not going to be great. And that trade sucked if you're a Rockets fan.
Well said.
Thank you.
You want to get a quick update on Lance McCullers Jr.?
Sure.
Lance McCullers Jr., we're trying to figure out ways to talk about baseball because they've locked him out. Let's listen to Lance McCullers. He was on the MLB Network radio last week. Just a quick update on what he thinks of the staff and maybe a little bit of a hint on his health.
And I think Christian Javier, obviously, he's kind of been back and forth a little bit from the starting role to the bullpen. But he has some of the best stuff around. You've seen what he's been able to do. Penn, of course, Framber, you know, is a really good young pitcher. Luis Garcia, absolutely fantastic season. I thought we had a great core last year. I'm really looking for Odorizzi to really bounce back and have a really great year. Outside of a few starts, especially those early ones when he probably wasn't fully ready, You know, he still had a pretty decent year overall. He just needs to get back into it a little bit. It's hard when you sign that late and you're trying to play catch up. So, of course, adding Verlander and, you know, myself, you know, have to be healthy. But we're going to have a really good rotation, you know, with a really great team.
Guy interviewing was a heavy breather a little bit there. Does that, we like to read too much into things. The fact that he's going out there and already claiming that this rotation is going to be very good and includes his own name in that rotation, we're assuming he's going to be at full health by the time the season comes around, if Major League Baseball lets them.
I would have liked to hear him elaborate more on his own health, because he even said, which was a little bit worrisome when he finished that thought, of course, I've got to be healthy.
Yeah.
So you're assuming he didn't need surgery. You're assuming that he's on track with everything in the offseason to get him back where he needs to be. But you're not telling me anything definitively that we don't have plenty to worry about. And I'm sorry, but as an Astros fan, what we went through last season with Urquidy is enough to have us have a level of concern. Like, you know what? Yeah, Urquidy didn't need surgery, but he had the same injury derail his season twice in the same year when they really could have used him. And that's the worrisome thing. Like, you get this thing going. You got the whole offseason right now and you don't do anything. And you just hope that everything's going to be okay. And then you get knee deep in another season where you're, you know, hopefully in another playoff run and more. And then all of a sudden you deal with the same issue. That's the fear for me.
I hate that Major League Baseball is depriving us of the excitement of the season coming up. It makes me sick because I'm bullish on this Astros team, ready for the season to start. Yet you have the black cloud that there's currently not a CBA. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, I'm going to tell you why Nick Caserio is the most powerful general manager in the NFL. So Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Who's this? Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.